this podcast was inspired by my work as a physical therapist in a neurologic-based rehabilitation clinic. Each and every day, I have the opportunity to use the expertise that I've gained through my training to guide my clients and their loved ones on a journey that can sometimes be fraught with uncertainty and emotions. Although I am a true believer that the work we do as PTs is incredibly important and essential, I have come to recognize that the best way to approach patient care is through a team approach. I've been faced many times with questions I don't yet know the answers to, or the realization that another type of specialist may be just what we need to burst through that plateau. I've witnessed how invaluable it is for the individuals I work with to feel supported and to meet others who have been through similar experiences. Because no matter how much compassion and empathy I bring to our interactions, I will never claim to truly understand what it is like to walk in a pair of shoes I've never even tried on before. So this project has an ambitious aim: to increase access to knowledge and information about rehabilitation and resources for optimizing quality of life for persons living with a neuromuscular and neurologic disorder or injury, to reach clinicians who want to learn more about the breadth of resources available to support the whole person that they're serving, and to provide a platform for storytelling and sharing as a way to remind each and every one of us that though we may not see ourselves in any or many of the people surrounding us, there's always someone out there who can relate. I'm excited to have you along on this journey as we cultivate and curate the content of this podcast and reach out to people around the country and the world who will hopefully find this information just when they need it the most. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Rehabilitation Reimagined podcast. I'm really excited to get the podcast going again after a long break during 2020. Today, I'm honored to introduce my guest, Drew Claiborne. Drew is a motivational speaker, director of the Drew Crew Charitable Organization, which I hope he'll tell us more about in a little bit, host of his own podcast called Excuse My Language, But, and the self-proclaimed healthiest complete quadriplegic. I first came across Drew on his Instagram page, where he's been sharing a lot about his life living with quadriplegia. And when he reached out to me about being a guest on the show, I jumped at the chance to get to know him more and to help spread the word about some of the great work he's been doing in his community. So, Drew, thank you so much for being here today.
Yes, thank you, Nikki. I'm excited. I like being a guest instead of a host. I can just talk.
Yeah, it takes a lot less planning, huh?
Exactly, yep.
So, Drew, I know you've shared a lot about your story and what you've been up to since your injury on your podcast and your Facebook page and whatnot, but do you mind sharing a little bit about it with our listeners today, just so they have some background?
Yeah, so I became paralyzed 10 years ago last year. I'm actually coming up on 11, and 2020 kind of screwed all my 10-year plans up. So I'm redoing 2020 this year to like redo my 10-year anniversary. So, but yeah, 10 years ago, I did a backflip in the hallway of my high school. Me and some buddies were goofing around in the hallway. I'm about to do some backflips. And yeah, when I did it, I broke my neck, complete C1, C2.
And for anyone that might not know what the complete means, do you mind telling them what that means?
Yeah, so your cervical spine, or really your spinal cord in general, it's when you sever it or when you damage it in general, it can be classified as incomplete or complete, where incomplete just means that you're still getting some functionality through that injury point, or you can be complete like me, where it's completely cut off. So when my injury happened, I could move my neck and a little bit of lifting my shoulders up and down, but that was it. And since then, though, I've definitely been able to gain a lot more sensation and some more movement in a bunch of different ways and subtlety. But what's subtle to someone else, I really notice. So I've noticed a lot more movement and strength in my upper torso.
That's great. And that's something I think is really the unknown for so many people. One, because Everybody's different and injuries are different, but also that question of, well, does the recovery, is it a hard stop? You know, is it that, okay, 3 to 6 months and we don't get anything else? Right. Is it just going to keep going little by little over time? And I think we have research and people's experience, but I don't think you can give a definite answer for anyone, which I think adds, I would assume from an outsider's perspective, adds both hope and also probably some frustration of just not really being able to predict things.
Definitely. You can't really predict it, especially in the beginning there. But I knew from the get-go, I just had this feeling. Like, I even remember the day of my accident. I had a feeling something was going to happen. I remember calling my girlfriend that morning and telling her I felt this overwhelming fear. Not fear, just this overwhelming feeling of dying young. And it just felt like something astronomical was going to happen. Soon. And then that day my accident happens, and I've always been a really intuitive person and gone by my heart and what I feel. And ever since my injury 10 years ago, I've always felt that I was gonna stay healthy, be healthy, and one day I will walk again. And that's why I put in so much effort every day in keeping my body healthy, and why I joke, and like my dad says it non-jokingly, and a buddy of ours, a therapist who actually created the therapy I use that keeps my body healthy, they both think I should be in like Men's Health magazine and like all this kind of stuff. But it is like, because I've kind of tapped into like untapped territory as far as therapy goes. Because anybody who's with me, all my nurses always say it, they've never seen a quadriplegic, especially someone with my level of injury, with my level of stature and muscle mass and flexibility and all that kind of stuff. I've never had a pressure sore. I've never had any of that. I've been able to keep my body healthy. And that's because of I do this electric stim wearable therapy, where it's like a garment that goes over my entire body. And it's fitted to me and it stimulates my muscles. But the big kicker is that I use it probably 10 times more than anybody else. If you think about it, just like you're sitting there right now. Hey, look at the sign on the door.
Podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, hi.
Hello.
That's my dad.
Hi, Dad.
Nikki.
Yes.
Hi, Nikki.
Hi, Mr. Claiborne. How are you? Happy belated birthday, I hear.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Am I on podcast right now?
You are officially being recorded.
How do you like that?
I'm getting all embarrassed. Okay, I'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Pretty sure I get my bashfulness from him.
So when you're talking about the wearable therapy, is that the AxioBionics?
Yep, AxioBionics, wearable therapy. It stimulates all my muscles. And our whole thought when I first got it, it's important to get it as early after your injury as possible. That way you don't have any muscle mass loss or muscle atrophy and all that kind of stuff. And your nerves are still responding, because technically he was telling me that it doesn't stim the muscle, it stims the nerves, and then the nerves stim the muscles. That's the whole idea with electric stim. That's what he told me. Maybe you can tell me or clarify, or is that how electric stim works?
Yeah, because essentially in a healthy or non-injured nervous system, we've got signals coming down from the brain. You know, if you want to move your arm, then the signal travels from the brain to the spinal cord, to the peripheral nerves, to that muscle, and say fire. But when there's that injury to the spinal cord or to one of the peripheral nerves, then that ability for that signal to travel from the brain to the muscle becomes interrupted, which is why despite giving the body signals to move, it's not happening, or it's not happening as strong as it was. And so the electrical stimulation, it's what we call an external stimulus. So rather than the internal stimulus of the brain through the spinal cord, the external stimulus is coming from the electrical stimulation and is telling that nerve to fire into the muscle. So just like you said, you can help to maintain muscle mass. And we've also seen through research that using the electrical stimulation helps to light up the areas of the brain that are associated with that muscle. So, because a lot of what happens early on with the injury is that the brain space that's dedicated to those nerves and muscles will kind of start to, that area of the brain will get more fuzzy. It's not as well defined. There's not as much space dedicated to it. And so it's kind of that use it or lose it principle. So the electrical stimulation can try to maintain that sort of pathway as best it can, so that if there is more recovery over time, you haven't totally atrophied that pathway and now you're fighting battles on multiple fronts.
Right. So because of that, use it or lose it mentality. Well, initially when I got it, which was like I said, a year after my injury, I used it a lot, as much as possible. So, but even part of my daily routine still. So when I get in bed, I stim my thighs and my calves. Mm-hmm. And then in the morning, I do my thighs and my calves again. And then I do my upper body. And the only reason I wait to do my upper body until the morning is because, one, it's hard for me to sleep through it, because at night I'll sleep through it. And then two is because my arms and stuff started to get too big. Like, seriously, because after doing it for so many years, I noticed my body kept getting bigger and stronger and stronger. But it's one of those things, similar how you're sitting in that chair, you're using your core, your abs, your back, all that stuff. You're using your muscles, whether you know it or not. Or like if you're walking to your kitchen, you're using muscles. And my whole thing is I want to get as many reps as possible of flexing those muscles. So doing it that many times, and this wearable therapy has like preset settings where it does 50 flexes for each setting. And I do 200 on my thighs and butt, and then 100 on my calves at night and in the morning. And then in the morning, I then do my arms, my back, and my abs. And doing that has been able to keep my entire body healthy. When I do my arms, I'm able to like flex my wrists back and forth and my fingers. When I do my lower body, it flexes my feet and my ankles. It completely lifts my legs off the bed, which is like straightening my knees out and then bending them back and forth. And you can like visually see it. It smacks, like it'll like smack down on the bed.
Yeah.
But doing that, I've been able to keep my body muscularly healthy. And doing that has kept me mainly entirely healthy, because it increases that blood flow that you need. It actually does well for my bone density, which is great too. And then, because it's moving me and all that. And that was the only therapy I did for 7 years after my accident. It allowed me, because I didn't go to rent or any type of rehab anywhere. And the reason I didn't, I stopped, because initially after my accident, for that first year, I was going to therapy and to rehab. And the issue was that it was inhibiting my high school and inhibiting me from going to school in general and finishing up. So my dad was like looking for something, and he just was randomly invited to one of these meetings, came across the wearable therapy, and immediately just by looking at it knew that was what I needed. And once we got going on it, I just never stopped. And it's been really, really crucial. And then after those 7 years, then I started to incorporate some other different rehabilitations to try to get joint movement, to try to get different type of benefits as well. And for spinal cord injury, I think it's really crucial that like people realize, especially after they're first injured, your body is only getting worse. even as great as I've done, as healthy as I am, I can still tell my spasms and everything are getting worse as the years go on. And I have to incorporate some more things to try to battle those things. And I think I'm doing pretty well, because I don't have a baclofen pump. I take baclofen 3 times a day for for my spasms, but I haven't needed to do anything extreme because I don't want to completely numb my spasms and numb my body. I want my body to be reactive and be able to tell me when something's going on. And that's a lot of what the spasms do for me. They'll tell me if I have an infection. They'll tell me if something isn't right with how I'm sitting or just anything. They'll tell me if something's going on, and then I can kind of learn what spasms mean what, if that makes sense.
Makes sense. I mean, you know, if you're not able to physically feel and perceive the sensations going on, you need to have some way of knowing. And it's amazing how telling changes in spasticity can be. I always tell people, like, if there's a sudden change, there's usually a reason. So, like, we got it, whether it's, you know, autonomic dysreflexia that some people are having and the blood pressure is getting really high, or it's positioning, or they need a cath, or you're having an infection, like something's going on, and it's so important to look at that. So that's a really smart thing to think about, is you want to have it be as under, you know, your spasticity be as under control, to be comfortable and to be able to do what you need to do, but not totally eliminate that signal that your body is giving you.
Exactly. Yep. And with that, like, because I know we were talking about the PEMF, and so you said you had one client that did it.
Yeah.
And did you notice anything with them?
So unfortunately, this was a client that had a stroke, so different mechanism of injury. But unfortunately, they had just started using it right before COVID started, and then they stopped coming to therapy because I was working at an outpatient therapy clinic, and especially early on, everybody was just so unsure about if it was going to be safe, and so I was not able to follow them long term. But I had kind of sent me into the research to try to figure out what kind of research is out there. At that time when I was looking at it for stroke, I didn't see a lot of research in stroke after the acute phase, like after it first happened, but I haven't had a chance to really look into spinal cord injury. And so I definitely would love to hear more about how you use it, how you set it up, and kind of what the protocol is.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me... this might be a bit of a story. So
let's do it.
Because I'm a math major. I'm pretty nerdy with stuff. I like all the nitty-gritty details of stuff. So for anybody that doesn't know, PEMF stands for pulsed electromagnetic frequency. And that pulsed electromagnetism is the main thing with it. People need to realize it's not electric stim, because it's not electricity. It's not... Some people label it as magnetism. I wouldn't call it that either. So the four fundamental forces of nature and our environment are gravity, weak force, strong force, and then electromagnetism. Electromagnetism is one of the main. So like the weak and strong force, the strong force is what holds a nucleus together and an atom. The weak force is what holds an electron to the nucleus. That's why electrons are able to move from atom to atom, all that kind of stuff. But then electromagnetism is what holds our atoms entirely together, like, and our cells together and all that kind of stuff. So it basically, the way I describe it is electromagnetism makes your body extremely efficient. It makes it do what it's supposed to do, exactly how it's supposed to do it. If there's videos online of like a molecular view of the blood flow before and after using it, and you can see the blood flow just skyrockets, like beyond what you could possibly imagine, especially for us, how we eat and how we do things, all the meat we eat, all the processed foods that we eat and all that kind of stuff just lowers our blood flow. And for anybody, not just spinal cord injury, this is huge, to because increasing that blood flow then increases the speed of which toxins are removed from your body, the speed that soreness and lactic acid in your muscles are removed from your body, the speed in which your body is able to process everything. And so PEMF has a lot of benefits, especially for spinal cord injury. So before I started using it, I was doing my own research because I was just like, okay, this seems hokey. You just lay on this mat for 8 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes and it's supposed to have all these great benefits. Why? So when I was doing my own research for like spinal cord injuries, I realized that a lot of our neurons are inhibited because we don't move, because our blood flow is even especially or worse. That's why we have blood pressure issues. That's why all that kind of stuff. Our blood flow isn't that great. And because of that, our body tries to combat it by putting what's called, I don't think I'm pronouncing it right, but they are spelled like parasites. And these parasites attach to our axons, to which, if people don't know, axons are what or how our neurons or how our nerves travel. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, it's like the kind of lock piece at the between like the body and the little pieces at the end. It's where the signal travels. Yeah, it's like the highways.
Yes. Yes, it's the highway for our nerves. So those axons get these parasites attached to it. The parasites attach, which happens for able-bodied people as well if they aren't having good blood flow. But the idea is that your body, he puts these parasites to try to increase blood flow and increase what the axons are getting. But because of paralysis, it actually does the opposite. It makes it even worse, and which is why our mobility will get worse over time and our motor function gets worse. So doing this PEMF, increasing that blood flow, I believe that is why I'm getting such an improvement in my motor function, because my axons are getting healthy again. And so even with my wearable therapy, even with all that, just laying on this mat 20 minutes a day, it has drastically increased my motor function and being able to move. And and I feel it. I can feel it when like I use my abs. I can feel my chest lift up off the chair, and crazy stuff. And it's just getting better and better the more I use it. Along with all the other therapy I do, which is like the wearable therapy, the quadricizer, which you can see videos on my Instagram of me in this like contraption moving all four of my limbs and all this stuff. So like all of it is working together to where now, 10 years later after my accident, my body's actually showing results of more feeling, a ton more feeling, a ton more movement. it's pretty insane.
That's really awesome. I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, if you haven't experienced a spinal cord injury, worked with somebody, known somebody, I think you don't necessarily realize like how much of a full-time job it can become to really maintain the health at the level that you have maintained it. Because as you said, as soon as you're not able to move, things kind of start to deteriorate on their own. And we see that effect even, you know, people who are working desk jobs who aren't getting up and moving around. So it doesn't have to be this like insane loss of movement. It can just be just degrees of less activity, and we start to see things, you know, the effects on the body. And so it seems to me like you have a pretty good team of people that are involved in helping you to do all these things. So who's in your corner right now? Like, what does your team look like, and what is it kind of key, like help you reach all these goals?
Right. Definitely. So I have a full team of nurses. Because I'm on a vent here in Michigan, I'm able to get 24 hours of care, nursing care, which I'm always fighting for, combating for, finding different loopholes. My dad is the driving force of that. He's always finding different ways that we can continue this going, because one of the main parts was Obamacare. They switched it to require private duty nursing. Your private insurance was required to continue paying after you meet your minimum deductible, so which with nursing care you would meet that within the first couple of days. Mm-hmm. So after you pass like $700. They were required by Obamacare to continue that, to continue paying. And so we were kind of doing that for all those years, but now they're starting to fight back with that and shift that and not do private nursing. But then we're finding another way or work around it and another service out there that's going to be able to stay with me for 24-hour care. But once I have my staff of nurses, my dad and me do all the training, hiring, looking for nurses, all that kind of stuff. And then once I train them, I just show them everything that I do, and I make sure that we're on the same page of, like, okay, then now I'm going to get on the quadricizer, and they know what that means. Like right now, I got my nurse Tammy here, and we just go through that way. And my whole thing is, because you have that struggle, like you're saying, it can be a full-time job, and it is. And yeah, we have that struggle of, okay, it's always the question, quality versus quantity, like keeping your body healthy. Do you keep your body healthy so you can live longer, or do you just live life and make sure and have fun and all that kind of stuff? And my whole thing is, you need a balance of both. I'm a Libra, I'm all about balance. And for balance, you need both mental, emotional, and physical strength in all areas. And so, yeah, and doing that, you need a quality of life and a quantity of life and be able to keep your body healthy and all that. And this has been doing the therapy at home, doing all these things here in-house, allowed me to do that. It allowed me to finish school, allowed me to run our nonprofit, allows me to continue striving for new goals and new opportunities, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I definitely have a couple more questions kind of about just your like rehab stuff. And then I wanted to ask you about the charitable organization and some of those other things you're involved with. So I can only speak for myself and my own training as a student PT when I was going through school. You know, when we go to school to be PTs, we learn a little bit about a lot of things. So we come out kind of as general therapists. I did a lot of extra training afterwards to get board certified in neurologic PT and a bunch of other things. But I think a lot of times therapists coming into working with the neuro PT world, we haven't really had a lot of experience working with people with spinal cord injury. You know, it's not something that you're seeing on a day-to-day basis. So what would you say, maybe based on your experiences early on and also here, like what are some of the things do you think make the biggest difference in your sessions that make you feel like they were really worth it? Because I know sometimes you come in and, you know, half the session is spent transferring and setting up, you know, this device exactly. And that FES thing. And not to say that it's not all beneficial, but unfortunately right. In the world of insurance-based rehab, you get an hour or you get 45 minutes. And if, you know,
exactly
20 of that is spent in setup, then what do you,
yes.
You know, it's hard to be efficient. So what do you feel like,
exactly.
You know, if you could have kind of your ideal things, what do you look for in a therapist and in a session that really helps you feel like you got your, you know, you got out of it what you went in for?
Right. So I'm actually going to, because of my recent growth and feeling and movement, I'm actually looking to go back to some sort of rehabilitation somewhere now that I know, and now that I know what things I want to work on. And I guess early on, God, I don't know, because we did the tilt table, we did the FES bike, we did and they had some contraption where I could float my arms and legs, and I did that, but all of it was unsuccessful because I didn't have any muscle, and there wasn't anything to help me gain muscle. I was having blood pressure issues. And like you're saying, you only have 40 minutes 40 minutes on the tilt table isn't enough for me to really train my blood pressure issues. You know what I mean?
Right.
And especially not 40 minutes twice a week.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that I don't know. I know when I go back, I want to, so I met with a really good physical therapist named Ken Bryant. You might want to look him up.
Ken.
In the spinal cord community, he's known as just this voodoo doctor because he does some things that you can't really explain. Mm-hmm. He can't explain. And that's also where a lot of my gain and movement came from. He just has the special touch, I'll say that.
Love it.
And once, but he's able to get your neurons and stuff firing again, or your nerves firing, however he does that. But then once he does, he's all about just functional things. He will put my arm in a sling, and then I'll just, and basically yell at you the whole time to try to just keep trying to move it. And that's kind of what I was doing, and I was getting stronger with it. I just need to do it more. And so I don't know if that's beneficial for someone early on after their injury, but maybe it might be a thing of putting them on a flat table and having them practice sitting up and arching their back more and more and more. Maybe because that's something you can kind of do quickly and efficiently, and just be like, take a break when you need, but we're going to take this whole, if transferring takes 15 minutes, we're going to take the whole next 45 minutes to just have you work out and work and try and try and try until you get a little better. And even if it's a tiny bit, if you can visually show them in video that they're moving more than they were, then that is motivation to me. That is something that when I watch my most recent videos of me like trying to do something and I can actually see it moving and see it doing, that's what motivates me. That's what gets me excited. And then, yeah, that's probably my best answer.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And I think you've sort of struck upon one of the bigger kind of conflicts in therapist mind, especially early on in an injury, because, you know, you are anytime, at least my understanding is over the last like 10 to 15 years, the amount of time somebody is allowed to spend in rehab before going home is so much shorter. Like some people used to spend 4 to 6 months. Now sometimes it's 6 weeks. And so much of the time just has to be spent on like getting someone home safely, making sure they, you know, they or their family knows how to transfer them, care for them, keep them safe, healthy. What's your day-to-day routine like? And it's a lot more on kind of that compensation and less about that recovery piece. And that I think is driven a lot by the payer, kind of the way that the payers work and the limitations on time. And so then it's like, so how do we maybe take advantage of some of those things earlier on where we're actually working towards like getting the muscles and recovering and trying to get the nerves recovering without losing those other things that need to be learned also. And, you know, I don't have the magic answer for that.
And well, I guess there, I would say things like this are important for them to listen to. Things like this podcast to be able to have somewhere to go to learn about the things. Because like you said, you're teaching them functionality as far as transferring and taking care of themselves when they get home. And that's crucial. That's really important, especially early on. So they need to learn all those things.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're learning and perfecting those things, I would say you should be placing in their ear or texting them things, just informational things or things for them to listen to where they can learn. Once you've accomplished that, once you've gotten there, these are the things that will help you actually recover. And just to like keep reiterating to them, like, okay, here's, we're doing this so that you know how to go home. But remember that there are recovery things out there. There are functional things out there. There are recreational things out there. And because that was one of the things I liked from my therapists that they would tell us about all types of different stuff. And then we would go look on our own. And because they won't know what's out there unless somebody tells them. And a lot of the time it's the therapists that get exposed to those technologies. Like even recreationally, like the joystick I have right here for my computer is also a gaming controller for like Xbox and PC and all that. And so like things like that, people just won't know about unless somebody tells them.
Yeah, that's so true. And that's been one of my favorite, that's kind of what's led to this podcast and my blog and other things has been one of my favorite things as a therapist has been just, I've gathered a lot of knowledge and resources just through my own work and meeting people and hearing from things and kind of putting mm-hmm. that in a central place, because it's amazing what just, you know, just information really empowers somebody. You know, you don't necessarily
think yes.
of them, but say, here's where you can go look, this exists, here's a jumping off point. And then people can take that and go and figure out what works for them. But nobody is expecting something like this to happen. So this is not, unless you have a family member or you work in healthcare, you know, these types of resources are just probably not in your day-to-day world. And so you don't know they exist. And nope. unfortunately, a lot of times, you know, it's not really in the realm so much of physicians and other things like that to necessarily know about some of these things. And so if you're just going to your doctor and that's your main medical provider, they may not even think or know of all the things out there to share with you. So it's great that there are yeah. professionals out there that can kind of do that. And then things like your blog and your podcast that take that personal experience and kind of put it out there. So tell me what inspired you to start sort of sharing your own experience and putting all this out there.
Same thing. Realizing that it wasn't out there and people or the things that I did see just weren't personal enough. Weren't authentic and genuine, similar to like me coughing right now. And people need to know about that kind of stuff. They need to know how to control those things, which I show on my YouTube channel, showing the nitty gritty things that I do that keep me healthy. Because this is all the physical therapy stuff, but there's also like me being on a vent, I do cough assist and suction and how I do those things in a healthy, safe way to keep my body healthy while also getting everything clear and making sure all that. So there's many aspects to spinal cord injuries. You have the physical and all this physical therapy stuff. You have the medical and everything, whether it's bowel, bladder, pulmonary, all that kind of stuff. And then you have the mental and emotional, which is a huge thing for people with, because the mental health aspect is huge. And for me, I think a big part of that was independence. Keeping your independence through all of this is a big way to prevent some of that depression, to prevent some of the sadness, to prevent some of the anger and all that kind of stuff. It's still there, but keeping your independence, I think, was a big way for me to hold on to my mental strength, which granted, I think personally, I am lucky to not battle with a lot of mental issues in general, but I think it is a huge area within spinal cord injuries that even I don't know about. I don't know enough about, and because it's something I don't deal with. Every spinal cord injury, it's all about the individual. Every spinal cord injury is like a snowflake. It's different as far as functionality and what we're able to do, what we're not able to do. So yeah, it's a big area of need, because a lot of people, because every single one's different, especially for even if my belief that they'll find some sort of a cure one day. I think it's, and that's why I keep my body healthy, so that in case that comes about, then I'm ready. But then even then, if they do, it's about like, is your body ready for that? And is your mind ready for that? And it's a huge taking, because every single one's different. How do you create a cure for something, for that something that is so varied and so I don't know, niche, because I think we only make up like something like 1% of the population. So it's like, yeah, and then every single one of us is different. So yeah,
it's totally true. From, like you said, not only different from kind of the medical presentation, physiologic side, but then, you know, what kind of support system do you have? What other maybe health issues do you have going on? Where do you live and what kind of resources do you have access to? I mean, it's just, it's like layered upon, you know, layer upon layer of these different facets of our life that make everyone's experience different. And I think that's a beautiful thing, but it's also a complicated thing. And it makes it so there's no one answer for everybody.
Right. Definitely.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit about your experience in college. So you went, is it University of Michigan you went to?
Yes. Yep.
And you said you were a math major. What was it? Yeah. Okay. I thought I read mathematical biology. Was that the official name? What does that mean?
Yes.
That sounds really hard.
Right. So yeah, U of M makes everything fancy. So they, because I say I'm a math major because it was like applied mathematics. So I was a math major, but the application was biology. Being able to do biological research was mainly because I initially wanted to go to grad school for bioinformatics, which is just more using math to solve biological questions and using math specifically with high-powered computing and different coding and all that kind of stuff to solve biological questions that consider large amounts of data. So like DNA sequencing, a lot of that's bioinformatics. Different molecular stuff is bioinformatics, or just anything to do with population modeling. Population modeling is what my major was. Mathematical biology is being able to look at a population, model it mathematically, and then moving those parameters to do what I want with it and then find what I want and all that kind of stuff. So like stem cells, one of my senior projects was you could do whatever you want, but I convinced my group to do stem cells. So we looked at stem cells and being able to see, okay, here's how it functions. You can completely write out in a mathematical equation how stem cells differentiate, which like what parameters do what, and incorporating them to differentiate. And then, okay, now that you have this mathematical model, if I want to take a stem cell and create nerve cells, how do I go about doing that? And that, yeah.
That's that's so cool. That is a level of science at which my brain does not operate. Let me tell you, I'm so glad there are people like you that can do that, because I know that is the foundation of so much of our bench research and that just like understanding so much of, you know, the human body and just other parts of science. So that's really cool.
Yeah, I loved it. It was really fun. I'm hoping I'll get back to it one day, because right now I'm just doing a nonprofit. It's, which is great. I love that just as much. It's an avenue. I'm able to help others if I can really build it to something great and to one of the organizations that revenue comes in, $250,000 a year or whatever, then I can really start implementing all these things I'm talking about. Being able to go to hospitals and change their whole structure to where the wearable therapy and electric stim is right on your body right after you're injured, so that you maintain your muscle mass, you retain your neuron responses and all that kind of stuff to keep people healthy. And that's what our nonprofit is trying to do. Keep people healthy while also encouraging life independence at the same time, because you need both. You need quality and quantity.
Yeah. So it sounds like you've got the, and it's the Drew Crew Charitable Foundation, right? And I'll make
Drew Crew Charitable Organization.
Charitable organization. And I'll make
but sure. But it's just, yeah, you can just go to thedrewcrew.org. And I have information on there. Right now, I have information on the PEMF mat. And if you go on there, you can get a code to get a discount, because while I do think it's a great product, I was also able to become a reseller to make it cheaper for people and so that they kick back me some money. And, well, really, our organization some money. That's really what it is, to build our organization. If I can sell more of the mat, then our organization gets more money, and then I'm able to do more. And yeah, and on the website, I'm starting to upload all the different equipment I use, all the different technology I use, where to get it, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's huge. That's what we need. And my blog is on the website, and that's where I kind of open up and give you my true feelings, my true thoughts. And then I've got my Instagram at Drew Claiborne for everybody, if you just want to see some crazy stuff along with all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I try to post, because I am back doing my podcast here soon. And with that, I'll just be talking. And for me, this type of talking is just therapeutic to get what's on my mind out there. Yeah.
And
I think that's, yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
That's awesome. And I'm glad you were able to share all those things. There's so much information on there and all the different kind of types of media and different ways that people can access it. It also looks like people might be able to reach out to you if they want some like one-on-one time or to talk with you. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. If you genuinely just want to ask me about what's going on, or genuine conversation, yeah, just reach out to me anywhere. Message me on Instagram, message me on Facebook or whatever. And then because I realized how lucky I was and how blessed I was to gain all the knowledge of everything I have over these years. And I'm always willing to share and let people know why I do what I do and why things work. Clearly I'm into the nitty-gritty science of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And maybe one last thing I wanted to ask is, if, you know, we're talking about, is your injury happened when you were in high school, right? So for those who, and maybe not spinal cord injury, it could just be anything going on, but anyone who's, you know, suddenly experiencing some kind of life-changing injury or illness when they're young, what really, it sounds like when you came back to school, you were able to get involved in a lot of the activities that you were involved in before, band and different types of things, and that the school and students really kind of were supportive in a way that helped you feel like you could kind of come back and be a part of that high school experience. What kinds of things did your friends and family and teachers do that really helped you transition back that you really appreciated?
Right. So I would say yes and no to what you said, because it was tough. I was 15 and my accident really regressed me in some ways. It's right at that crucial age where people are growing quickly and fastly and finding their independence, doing all those types of things and being their own person and all that. And for me, I didn't really get to experience all that. I was stuck at 15, I guess, mentally and socially, I'd say, for years. And it took college. It took meeting really good friends in college, because my high school and my school did an amazing job to make sure I was still qualified and capable to do everything I was doing. Like, I kept doing marching band, and it was really my senior year in high school where I kind of took that next step, where I was able to be like, okay, fuck everything else going on. fuck however I feel about whatever. I just want to be me and, you know, still continue to do everything at the level I was used to doing it before my accident. Because before my accident, I was in marching band, football, basketball, a million different clubs. I tried to do everything I possibly could all the time just because that was what I enjoyed. That's what I liked. And that while also having really good grades, taking really hard classes and all that kind of stuff. And after my injury, like you said, it becomes a full-time job to stay healthy. And it's hard to do both. And that first year after my accident, I wasn't there yet. Not just because of the knowledge of knowing what was possible, but because mentally I was taking a break. And I needed a break and to really observe everything and see what was going on. So after that first year, I felt like I was ready and could see, okay, if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to do school at a high level, I need a desk, I need some sort of joystick, I had my joystick, but like I needed things set up so I could do it properly and how I wanted. I knew how I wanted to do things. And then I looked at marching band and was like, okay, if I want to do marching band at a high level and be able to do that how I want to do it and what is a high level to me, I need this, I need this, I need this. And I proposed that to my dad. I proposed those things to my school. I proposed those things to the leadership in my marching band. And they just trusted me that I was going to be able to do it. And they said, let's do it. Let's go at it. And my dad helped me and get a desk in my room and everything set up so I could scan all my homework. Because back then, 10 years ago, not everything was virtual. Not everything was on computers. So it was like I had to figure out they were always passing out worksheets and paper stuff. And I hated it. I can't really look down if I'm really trying to work on something or try to have somebody else write for me and everything. So I was like, okay, I need a scanner to scan everything. I need all these different things. But it took me time to observe it and to kind of plot it out in my head of like, okay, this is what I need to do what I need to do. And then once I got those things, then I needed to execute it. Need to execute it, and that's not easy. And it's, but that's how we got to U of M. How I was able to stay on campus, how I was able to do all those things was just, like you said, the support you have. I had a lot of support, a lot, whether it was, and not just my parents and my family, but then the Drew crew and our organization. My community really came up for me, still comes up for me whenever I need, and not just for me, but so that I can do more for others as well. And yeah, it's not easy. But, it can be difficult, but we're getting through it.
And it sounds like you have really taken some steps to pay it forward and using all the voice that you have out there through the internet and everything to maybe make it so the next person doesn't have to spend so much time trying to figure it out, because you've done some of the work and you can, you know, help show them the way a little bit. So
that's, but then one thing I would mention is just what you were asking about early on after the accident. I can tell you that I didn't reconnect with my friends until probably a year or two after I graduated from college, because, like I said, my accident regressed me mentally and socially. It took a lot more experience. It took longer for me to figure out who I was, because that's anybody going through their 20s. They all we are is just figuring out who we are, what we are, what we're about, all that kind of stuff. And mine was lagging, and I'll say that. And for me, friends disappeared. I had to kind of go back at them and be like, what the fuck? And I miss you guys. Why haven't I seen you? Why? And then all that kind of stuff. You have to go through those waves with everybody around you. Everyone initially, when your accident first happens, is all gung-ho, say all the greatest things. And it takes about 2 years. Year two is where you really see who's really there for you for the long haul. Because that first year, it's still fresh. It's still exciting. And everybody's saying the right things. But, yeah, things die off. But then at the same time, you have to be open and honest for when it does come back around. Because if you're not open for it when it does come back around, you won't be ready to accept it. Because people change. We all evolve as time goes on. And so if you are open to it, and open to new opportunities, open to new relationships and friendships and all that, it comes back and it can be better.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's a good thing for all of us to remember, because no matter what your situation is, you know, being open to those opportunities and realizing that as much as we're growing and changing, probably the people in our lives are too. And sometimes it just takes some time to come back around when we can ask for what we need and maybe accept what they can give us at the time. So that's cool that you were able to do that. Yeah. Well, that's awesome, Drew. Is there anything else you want to share or talk about before we end this?
I don't know. What do you want? Yo, well, tell me about you. What do you do?
So I'm a physical therapist. I live out in Arizona. I'm currently taking a little break to change jobs, but I've done pediatric and adult neuro rehab for quite a while. I went to school at the University of California, San Francisco, from Northern Ooh. California. I love San Francisco. loved being out there. But if you've ever tried to afford living in San Francisco, you'll quickly realize it's a bit tough. So, yeah, but I love being out in Arizona. And, you know, I got to admit, neuro was probably the hardest class I took in PT school. There's a lot to learn, and it's really hard when you don't have actual people in front of you, and you don't actually see examples of what you're learning. And so I started, there's an awesome facility out here in Phoenix called Ability 360. They have a huge adaptive sports and fitness center. It's beautiful. They have a lot of adapted sports like wheelchair rugby and basketball and swimming and rock climbing. And they have a huge fitness center. So it's really cool. Awesome. Nice. Place. And I just did some volunteer work out here when I moved out here, just getting to know some different places, helping out in their fitness center and working with the wheelchair tennis team, and just got really interested in, you know, kind of working with some of the athletes and other people that I was working with. And so I kind of made a left-hand turn from just working with kids to this population. And I found a really good mentor that was willing to sort of teach me the things I didn't know and did a lot of schooling. And it's been fun. Like I've kind of nerded out just as much here today with some of my explanations, but I think that there's so much about the body and the brain that we know, but there's so much we don't know. And I just love the opportunity to work with other professionals, because I don't think that any one particular profession has all the answers, and I think we can learn so much from each other. I've been really excited about this kind of lane of the profession for a while, and I'm excited to try to turn my career into doing the type of PT that I think will help the most people, and trying to really, I don't know, craft it into something where we can get the best type of rehab for the most people and meeting people's needs and hopefully having fun and just creating a good community around it.
Absolutely. That's awesome. And that's needed. It's needed. It really is. And it's, like you said, that community around it. Yeah, because it can feel really lonely as a spinal cord injury person. And I think social media has done a great job of, it's like a little fraternity now. I feel like I know everybody in a chair at this point. So I'll hear people be like, hey, do you know so-and-so? And I'm like, yeah, I know them. And it's fun. And then it, like you said, you're able to like really learn about different things and new things to try. That's how I came across the PEMF, Matt. It was all just talking to people. you find new stuff, and then you'll hear about something and be like, oh yeah, that's what I need. That's something I can do. That's something I can put into my routine. That's something that'll benefit me, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it really is an amazing. I know that there's, I guess you could say, a dark side to social media and things like that, but there's such a bright side to it.
Clearly.
Yes.
Clearly, given by what might be going down tomorrow. Jesus Christ. The inauguration. I'm sitting here on my toes like, Jesus, do we need to, we might want to be strapped up tomorrow. But
like I said, there is a definite dark side to what can happen through some of these things, but I've gotten to see a lot of the good stuff for it. And I think bringing people from, you know, across the world kind of in this smaller area where you can communicate and learn from people and people can kind of get their voice out there or just feel like they're heard, you know, because everybody at some point in time has felt alone in their experience, and just being able to see that other people are going through it, just that alone, whether you interact or not, can be, I mean, it can be life-saving for people. And just having that that knowledge that there's a community out there for you is, I mean, I think that's huge for all of us.
Absolutely. And it's I love it. And it is the kind of the good part of it that we're able to show right now. And it's funny, like you said, we all know that feeling. I was thinking back to my first podcast that I did almost 2 years ago now. And it's, for me, podcasting has been therapeutic to really express the things that I'm thinking about, feeling, especially for people like me. I can't really express like my anger or frustrations out like physically. Like I can't go for a run or fight in a gym or something like that. Everything I deal with is mental, and it's all up here. That's all I have. So being able to talk like this and let things out, it just, it feels good.
Well, thank you so much for coming on here today. This has been such a good conversation. I've learned a lot and really enjoyed getting to know you, and I'll make sure that everybody knows where to find all the links to your website and whatnot, and hopefully we can chat again one day.
Sounds good.
All right, Drew.